how many of you have struggled in school yourself? Oh, we do have some. Would class yourself as real school, really struggled in school? Okay, then how many of you, see there's different levels here, how many of you enjoyed your academic years thoroughly when you went to school? That's the majority of our teaching staff. Okay, we hit the two extremes. Now, as we look at what this class is going to consist of, and by the number here, I see that that's the reason we moved the class around, swapped. There's a lot of interest in this. What is a struggling student? How to work with them? Dealing with them. In the workshop today, we want to look at developing a mind and a heart to work with this struggling student. I would like to send you home with things you can put in your pocket and your purse and take back to your classroom with you. But more than that, you're going to have things that you can probably take in your mind and your heart when it comes to dealing with the struggling student. I'll give a little introduction of myself. You know my name is Peter Witt. I'm from the South. I'm from Georgia, Montezuma, Georgia. Teach at the Montezuma Mennonite School and principal there. Have been with the school there for about 19 years. And I was a struggling student. My background is not of the Mennonite people. I was a struggling student that hated school. I hated school and I hated it. I didn't just dislike it, I really hated it. And when the call came to teach, I wondered, Lord, not me. I mean, really. Remember, if you don't, I do. This is me. But although I struggled with schoolwork and academics, I love to learn. And that's what school is all about, is learning. So as I have spent the years in the classroom I have there, my heart has been able to relate to the needs of a struggling student. I kind of pick them out and can maybe feel for them. But I also realize that I had my own little corner in my struggle, and struggles are very diverse. And the needs of those struggles are very diverse. But most of us that did well academically in school have a little problem relating to those needs. And that's what I'd like to give you this morning, is a window into a struggling student. We're going to be looking at digging deep into the roots of those things, as deep as time permits for us to. Try to realize whether this student has emotional problems, mental problems, physical problems, or are they just academic problems? And these things are so intertwined that when we start digging into these things, you'll soon realize that these roots are almost inseparable. We can identify them, but what they produce is a struggling student. So evaluation is an important part of this thing, to evaluate what we're working with. When you identify a struggling student, now, if I would give us all opportunity this morning to say what your struggling student is like, we'd spend probably all of our time doing that. And we could probably all relate to certain symptoms that are very similar in struggling students. But we're going to have to do some lumping and jumping to get through this thing. As we look at emotional struggles in evaluating a student, we want to look at does this student stable? Does he want to get in a corner? Is he quiet? Or can you not keep him in a corner and keep him quiet? Both of those can be the results of academic needs, you know, I mean, the root of academic needs when it comes to the work that's on that desk. Often, emotionally struggling students are inferior. They have fears. They feel like they're inadequate to meet the demands of the classroom, the demands of the teacher. And they have most of these children soon develop a place of hiding. They have a place to go somewhere in their mind to escape the pressures that are around them. I remember my own places of escape, little dens of safety. But this emotional child, as we evaluate his emotional struggles, his fears may be because he feels inferior to his peers. His fears may come from home to school. He may have abusive parents or siblings. He may fear his peers. He may fear bullies. Maybe he's a timid person, and he fears rejection or acceptance. And a lot of us, see, we can relate to these things in our own selves, but they're compounded when you mix them with other needs and they start showing up academically. Often they have insecurities. Maybe they fear the workload. I know what it's like to go into a classroom and know before I ever get there that I can't do what everyone else can. And what am I going to do about it? It's standing there facing me every day. And then you have the fears that seem to settle in to the bubbling pot of low self-esteem. Now, as these children, you know, as this, I don't want to draw this thing too dark, but I want it to be dark enough to be real, that you get a window into some of these struggles. And when you look at some of the mental things, we're going to touch some bases here of evaluation. We touched a few emotional things. Let's look at some mental things. The hyperactive ADD, and today we're going to be looking at some information that I've accumulated looking into ADD. And ADD, you know, is attention. It works with being able to keep your mind focused. And when we're looking at attention and keeping it focused, aren't we looking at most of our struggling students right there? Processing, grasping, hanging on to. That's a lot of it. So ADD is a diverse thing. Some people think that is one, you know, handicap, ADD. It isn't. There is a whole host of things that fall under that category. Now, when you start adding specific things like hyperactivity or hypoactivity to those things, then we get into like HD or ADHD. Mood swings. You know, this person that is okay now, something happened and he's a thundercloud sitting over there in his desk and everybody knows it and they're waiting for lightning to strike. And sometimes there's that short attention span. They're looking at you, we're going good, everything's happening fine, and you find out that somehow they have seen through you and are reading something on the wall back here or something because they're not picking up anything that you've just told them. Their attention's just, you know, that's again, the ability to hang on to it. Sometimes they're impulsive. I talked about the withdrawn student. That was me. I can relate to that. But sometimes they're impulsive. And sometimes they just can't hold still. Physical problems. And one of the greatest of these that I'm going to speak about because of the variety of them, I'm going to speak about hearing and seeing today. There's a host of eye and brain barriers that break down that connection. But if I can't process what I see, I'm not seeing it deeper than my eyes and only a very shallow part of my brain. And if a lot of things come rushing at me all at one time, I'm going to have a problem discerning these things and putting them in the right folders or categories to where I can put them in there, and that's what we call learning, when we store them away and can use them again. As these things come, you know, there's things that mix these up. I was just recently working with a little girl that has dyslexia. And as I was called in, I wanted to ask to come view the problem. Teacher was confused. You're talking about an eager little girl. Oh, you just couldn't ask for a child that put their heart into their work. You'd give her something to do, and she just did it with all her might. When you ask her to read, she read with all her might, backwards and forwards and upside down. It reminded me of putting the letters in a jar and shaking it and asking her to read it through the glass, not dump it back out on the table. She read in such a spontaneous way. I wasn't sure at what all her problems might be, but the first thing I encouraged them to do is to get her eyes checked, because I'm not sure her eyes and brain are seeing the same thing at the same time. It turned out she was dyslexic. The motor nerves that help us walk and balance, and our brain as it controls those things. I had a student once that had to put an incline on their desk, and she held her head kind of at an angle. And when she walks like this. When she looks at something, she does that. To her, that straightens it out. Me, wanted to tell her, straighten up, you know, look at it straight. But it went out of focus. To her, that was real. She learned to live with that. She lives with it today. She's graduated now. And that's what we're here for today, is to realize that there is a way for these struggling students to succeed. They will not fit a normal mold. They may come close to it. With time and work, they may be able to get similar to it. But as long as we try to force them into a normal mold of a normal student, whatever that is, we're going to struggle, and they're going to struggle. It's very important to evaluate, to figure out as best you can what you're dealing with. Because just to try to stumble over this thing and drag it along with us through class won't do anything but lead to fears and frustrations for the child, and frustrations and disappointments in a teacher that wants to see his students succeed. And as those things build, it leads to failure in the success of this child. So we start looking at the individual and studying and trying to discern. And as we evaluate, we may come up with a label to put on this child. We may even come up with a label to put on their struggle. But you know, if all we do is hang a label on them then and stand them in the corner and say, we've done it, we've figured it out. No, we've only gone the first step. That is one of the first tools in your toolbox to fix what's wrong with this child. We're only started. When we figured it out, then we know how to maybe find some help, some research, and get to work to make this child a success. Now, in the level of struggling that I'm talking about today, I'm talking about a child that can succeed and can be brought up not to the level of others, but can be brought up to a level of success. I'm not talking about the child that is handicapped to the level that everything will have to be geared to them. That's a whole other story in itself. And we don't have time to get but so broad today. Okay, so the answer to the bottom line is we're looking for solutions, not excuses. We're looking for a way to help this child. We need to see what's inside. We need to look through the window at what's going on inside this child. First of all, we need to realize God never made a mistake. This child is a creation perfect in itself. As long as I view that from a negative point of view, or think I've got to do something to make him like these, or I have to get him to this point, as long as we're working at it like that, it's not going to work. We have to realize God created this child in their handicap and in their struggles to succeed. It's up to me to figure out how to connect them in life together. And I'm talking about something that calls the extra out of a teacher. This calls us to go the second mile and to really look and pray. But they are a perfect creation of God. And to present them to God in prayer in a way that, Lord, help me discover what will make Bobby successful. Not how can I make Bobby be like the others. And at that point, we're going to begin to accept Bobby like he is. Now, they're so complex as to the reactions of these children. Some of them react and show in their search for themselves and their success, they find it in being mean sometimes. And you know, it's hard to deal. See further than the issue there that you're dealing with. Why did Bobby do what he did? Did he really mean to do? Why did he do that? Do I believe in my heart that Bobby wants to do that? You know, we can come to a mindset. I have to work with myself on these things. To put them in a category and say, this is a bad case right here, and I'm going to break him, instead of trying to figure out and start digging into the roots. But if we want to hurt them, compare them to the others. And also, that is really secretly a challenge to them. To ask them, why can't you just do like everyone else? You know, that is a challenge that they'll rise to meet most of the time. But they're going to meet it in ways that we're not going to be happy with. They'll rise above in ways we're not happy with. When they realize that we accept them, and this may take time, and we love them, and we're concerned about them. I've taken children that, for the deeds done, they needed to be spanked, or some real stiff punishment. But when I thought about it and prayed about it, there was a deeper reason for why the deed was done. That in I became under the conviction that how I handle this thing will have a real impact on the future of our relationship and me being able to dig a little deeper to his roots. So time and prayer are an important part of understanding these children. Don't think for a moment they don't know they are like they are. So that's the mistake we make sometimes. If he just knew how he is, he wouldn't be like that. Well, he knows how he is. And he doesn't need to be reminded of it either. He doesn't need to be told, do you realize that you did this, 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 and you did you this is the way. He knows that. But that's part of the way he's doing and he's being to probably hide some things that he feels very inferior about. As we face the facts that we have a perfect creation, this child is, God loves him. He's given me this responsibility to deal with this child. We are going to embark on not a journey, but an odyssey. of adventure. Don't be afraid to start down paths that are not the beaten paths and searching for a way to work with Bobby. If this isn't the normal mode of the way we go about accomplishing teaching something, look for some other ways. Often these children need things that are more hands-on, they're able to relate to and apply in some type of a practical application and work with. Some type of teaching technique. And this, you know what I'm talking about? This is going to require time. And you ask the question, where do you get more of that in a classroom? I know I've been there many times, but as you start down this odyssey of search, and that's, I could relate to what Steve said, my search has been because of myself. That's the reason I can put my heart into this. And you will find that God will grant you the ability to do this thing and to have the boldness to maybe request from your board changes and differences, things that you might try that are new, so that Bobby, you know, can succeed here. A few things that I've done when I get a case like this is to study achievement test. I don't know, you know, some type of a normed test that you can get your hands on if this child has a academic trail behind them. This is a big help. Now, I'm an upper grade teacher, so when I get a hold of a case like this, I usually know it's coming before it gets to me. Being the principal in the school, watching students from first grade up, I pretty well know what's coming. But I like to study achievement tests because it shows me their weaknesses and their strengths. And as I see these learning trends, it can help reveal some things to me. So many of our struggling students struggle with the areas of the written word. How many of you can relate to that? Reading is a lot of that. Okay. But the amazing thing is I've found the correlation there of spelling working into that. But I've had some that just threw me a hard curve right there. They struggle with reading, and they try, their comprehension is low, but their spelling's excellent. That was a hard curve. Because the Lord blessed me in the way of a wife with a good speller. And on my desk, I have, in my reading problems, I have to keep spelling helps. And the students, my students, know this. I don't hide it from them. They soon discovered it. If I'm orally reading in front of the class, and I've, believe me, 19 years kind of honed some of it. I did learn to work with it. But still, today, if I'm reading in front of the class, I'll be reading along because of my particular problem. And you're making eye contact, you're reading, you know, and all of a sudden the eye contact tells me something's not right. Sure enough, if I back up, I'll find that I made a mistake. And if sometimes I just can't catch on, we have such a good working relationship that somebody will just kind of get my attention. Mr. Witt, it doesn't say that. Okay. Here we go. You know, I'm supposed to be the teacher. But see, I've accepted this thing after a long time. They have accepted me. So don't fear that the rest of the class won't accept what you're doing with this student, because they probably realize Bobby's struggles already. You can't rub shoulders with someone year in and year out going to school with them and not know what they're like. And often they realize, I have come to the point that I have sent Bobby to go get something for me up in the front of the school just because I needed to get him out of the class and explain to the class that I was fixing to do something pretty drastic here. Just just a little bit. I didn't want to bring attention to Bobby. Didn't want to lift him up. Didn't want to crush him down. But I was fixing to do something that was a little bit drastic, and I knew they would have questions about it. So I answer those questions just enough to get me by. And we go on. So study achievement tests or any type of a record that you can get your hands on. See if you can find some kind of consistency that will reveal weaknesses. If you have a curriculum that you're working with, it has a placement test, and you're wondering about Bobby's workload, give them the placement test. That's not a totally reliable source, you know, to go by as to where to place them. But it may help reveal some things to you about this student and this curriculum in particular, and help you decide what to do and how to do it. There is also professional help that can be sought. If you're discerning that you have a student that is really struggling and he's very diverse, and he's maybe got a combination of some mental things and some things that don't fit the normal forms, you can go one step further out there into that professional evaluation. That's your psychologist. People don't like psyche words, but believe me, they're those that are there just for working with children and just to evaluate learning things. We had this situation with a little fellow, and the psychologist came back with a report that revealed some things that helped us see more on the inside of what was going on with this little fellow. And it helped us to deal with him. We actually put him in a separate class, and he had a teacher of his own, and we went on one-on-one with him to try to start addressing these things. I'll share this quickly. One thing is, in his situation, he has a problem holding still. He's just, if he's got a pencil, it's running around on his desk and tapping and bumping, and you're trying to explain something to him because he doesn't understand it, and he just still doesn't understand it. He's not with you, but in little snatches and things like that. Once we knew this, there was no need in it's like trying to take a black cow and make her brown. We've got a black cow to deal with, and I just will get on with it. And that's where we were with this little boy. But you know, it was amazing. Some of the things we wanted to at least teach him to start developing things, not just hang a label on him. We had a whole file on this boy. But what was in the file? Just help to start the journey with. Well, we did, and I'm not going to suggest you doing this. If you do, be very careful with it, because word got out and we had to straighten out the effects of thoughts towards us. But my daughter came up with the idea, who was his teacher, that she found out if she can hold him still, it automatically does something to his mind. That was interesting in his struggle. So she took a piece of yarn and she went around each desk leg to his ankles, and she made him put both hands on his desk and keep them right there. She had a place for them. Nothing, no pencils, anything. And then she would explain something to him. And for some reason, it went home. Now, word got out that we tied the little boy to his desk, and, you know, I hated that. But when I explained to him what we did, we were just experimenting. We're on an odyssey here. He could pick his feet up out of the yarn if he wanted to. But we discovered something. We really did. This is all, these are just little tips that start us down the road of search. And it is more difficult to do these things with a whole classroom besides. But God gives us the grace once we start searching. I would encourage you, as you start to search, to get to know the child's home life if you can. Share with the parents. Be open with what's happening at school. You're probably not going to tell them anything they don't know, but it might come in a different shade because His activities around the house have probably revealed through the window of his learning experience. So getting them involved in this, and them to also assist you, and they'll probably be able to expose some roots that you would have dug a while to discover on your own. They'll be able to expose those roots right away, and that'll be helpful in evaluating and understanding these things. So build a good, trusting relationship with home there. As we step up to this child, they may experience something they haven't experienced before in school. A teacher that's a friend. A teacher that's not just a leader of a whole class, but a teacher that cares about me and realizes I'm not quite on the same level as everybody else all the time, and isn't ashamed of me and is helping me. But they often still drop into these low points of self-esteem and inferior feelings. So working with home and sharing those things with home to help keep boosting the morale and working with that. And if time permits, we'll talk a little more about home relations, because it is really a subject in itself in dealing with struggling students. Be honest with the child about their struggles. Don't try to butter it up and hide it from them. Be honest. These are confidential things you'll have to share. But be honest with them that we're going to help you. We're going to figure out what is troubling you. Ask them, do you enjoy reading? Do you like to read? 99% of students are going to tell you no, not especially in reading class. But you give them their favorite book, but this little child's going to most likely avoid reading. So be honest with them. Don't hide it. As you step out and acknowledge this thing, and if you can bring them to acknowledge it, that they have things that they need help with, and that you're the doorway, standing in the doorway with them, they'll see the hope and not the helplessness in a teacher. They'll see someone that is a source of finding some way to help me succeed, because a child sitting in the first couple of years of school, they just bang and bop around in this stuff, and teachers kind of drag them along through, but often struggling students start defining themselves as strugglers in about a third and fourth and fifth. They're getting, you know, the rest of the class is moving on, and Bobby doesn't have the foundation he needs. His struggles are becoming very evident. So working with them there and getting them to see that finally we're going to be addressing this thing, helping them to look positive into it. Try to help them find things about that they can relate to, that you can, you know, praise them for. We've got to stop them from running and hiding from their problem and struggling with their work. They've got to learn to live with it and accept it, and then at the same time that God has made you for a special reason in His kingdom. That's one point I really like to drive home. God made you for a special reason. He made me for a special reason. But I do have one advantage, is I can tell Bobby that I do know a lot of what you feel. I was once so scared. I was once frightened of my teachers. I was in the sixth grade before I ever read my first book. And after I finally read that first book, I realized that for the first time that books have, between the covers, there are interesting and exciting things. But I had missed so many years of discovering that it had really handicapped me in my learning experience. But I didn't want anything to do with books And this was only a timid relationship. Okay, I read a book. And it kind of dawned on me. Hey, I read a book. I read a book all the way through. And I liked it. It started me to opening up to books. But I didn't have a teacher that would help that. I was on my own in this odyssey. In a public school system with many, many students. Up to that point, I felt that most of my teachers in the classes that I went to, and especially for some reason the sixth grade, acutely brought this to my mind that my teachers are here to expose what I don't know instead of teach me what I don't know and to show it to everyone else. You know, that talks of a very, you might say, poor relationship, as that's not even a good way to express it, as of a student and a teacher. It was very hard and difficult for that teacher to do something that I liked or would accept because of the mindset I had about her. I wanted to go back into my little cave of safety. And that place was the worst place for me to be because the longer I stayed in there and didn't come out and deal with this thing, but I didn't have a teacher that would help me. I didn't have a teacher that would understand me and help me with that. Why I couldn't read like I was supposed to. Oh, I hated oral reading. I knew when it came to me what was going to happen. I was so tied up in a knot that I couldn't help but happen when it came to me. And it did, sure enough. I've probably talked about the problem long enough that you're wondering what it is. For some reason, when I'm reading, I don't see everything that's there correctly. I read across things. It's not dyslexia. I saw it the first time. The brain didn't process it. And then, if I get in a hurry, I'll implant words that aren't there. I'll try to make it say what I want it to say. If you can imagine it, I'm processing this thing and already trying to figure out what the end of it's going to be before I've even read it all. I'm the fellow that puts the bookcase together without the directions. He looks at the pictures, but he puts it together three times before he gets it right. And as I did this, with time, I developed a check system. Your computer have a check, so beep, you know, when you misspell something, all those little helps. I developed a check system. And this check system, as I'm reading, says, you just messed up. Something doesn't make sense. Don't ask me how this works because I can't explain it. But I stop right there and go back quickly. And sure enough, I either didn't read a word that was crucial or I read something that was added a yay or a nay to it that made it totally wrong. This check system has helped me out, but I had to develop it. And I pity anyone that has to do this with time. If we can work with this child and help them to understand that they're a struggler and we can help them succeed. I was sitting in class one day looking at some children. I had a particular group that year that was several strugglers in that group. I had a large group. There was 21 students in three grade levels. And as I was teaching, I sit in the back of my class and have a table up front. I went to the back of the class and sat down at my desk. I was sitting there thinking about this group. And I thought, why? What is a bright spot in their day? They struggle, they work, these others are sitting around here, they're finishing up their work. You know, they're getting to pull out library books and do other things. What is a bright spot in their day? There isn't one. What makes school the place that I want to be tomorrow morning for the rest of the class and these others that come in? You know, they're here, they want to play ball, they want to do other things, but when it comes to work, they just shrink down. What can make that difference for them? Success. To succeed. These others taste it every day. But the struggler tastes it very seldom. And a thought came to me that the success of today is the strength to face tomorrow. If I don't ever taste success, I don't have any strength to address tomorrow. So how can I help them succeed? Now, often we think of cutting work back or lightening up workloads or changing work levels as kind of taboo. What will the others think? Well, I got kind of bold. I thought, Mr. Whit, you know exactly where they are, and I think you know how to go about starting. That year, with as many students and as many levels as I had, I created one more. I made an A and a B class. And they didn't know they were the B class, because that would have been, again, here I am, there they are. But they were my B class. And I couldn't tell you, this was so long ago, I couldn't tell you how I did it. Actually went about putting it together and bringing it about in a way that the whole class took a lot of prayer and careful consideration. But I created a class that had a different load level. The core subjects, we kept very close the same. Your language arts, English, math, we kept those on level as much as we could, but maybe not quite as much of it. But one thing we don't want to do is stop challenging these students. We don't want them to sit back in this chair that we've created here. We figured out your problem, sit down. No, because they'll gladly oblige you in that. It's just that we've got to figure out a way to continue them, to challenge them, but to be successful in that challenge, they have to attain something so that they can be somewhere and taste success. And that B class did it for that group. Actually, there was a subject or so that I gave them of another grade level. They accepted it. I had one young fellow in particular in that class. He's a minister today. And see, this is the amazing thing about children that struggle. They almost always have areas that compensate, that they excel in, where they struggle in the mold of the norm student. This is God's creation. It's not mine. And it's not fair for me to try to fit him into my mold. God has a special purpose for him. But yet in his bag of education, I do need to put the practical things he needs to succeed. Somehow, I have to get him in that bag. I talk to my students about a tool bag because I'm an electrician by trade, and my tool bag is very special to me. I take it with me when I go out on a job. I often take it with me when I travel in case somebody has a problem. I talk to my students about having a bag that they got in the first grade and they're going to carry it with them all the way through school. And I want them to put everything in that bag that they can. When I hear the things, Mr. Whit, what am I ever going to do with this? We're going to put it in your bag. And somewhere in life, you might want to pull it out, or you might need to. But I will grant you, if we don't put it in your bag, you will not pull it out later in life. So we're going to put it in your bag. And they accept that theology and that thinking. Running out of time for this subject. As we love and appreciate and trust these children, they will learn to love and appreciate and trust us. Helping them to see their place in God's kingdom is forever so important. Pray for yourself, not just them. Pray for yourself for wisdom, for patience. Because it's going to take more of those things. You will get tried. And those trials will be, if they come in the right perspective, they'll be a stepping stone and to get us further down the road in this search instead of a stumbling block in helping this child. But there, as we open up to them and they open up to us, I've been rewarded with children seeing things that would have never come out if they hadn't felt like they could trust somebody. I remember a situation with a little girl one time. She raised rabbits. Little girl was, she had, well, we won't go into the learning struggles, but she was a struggler. And she raised rabbits. And at this particular time in her life, in the seventh grade, she had this bunch of rabbits. And she had this vision of probably getting rich with rabbits, which is very difficult to do. But we came to a place in social studies where we were studying about Australia and how they brought in all of these European hares to eat up all this undergrowth, and they got out of hand and they just devastated the environment. And what I was wanting to lead them to is how man's involvement in God's creation often is a mess up. And I thought of Judith. This is a chance to let Judith shine. She likes rabbits. Judith, what do you see in this? Lots of rabbits. Lots of rabbits. She could sell all trapping. Oh, this child went off in left field somewhere. She missed the point a mile. But she honestly saw it from her perspective, and I had to appreciate that. This isn't my window to look through. This is hers. This is her life. This is God's creation. But it did help me. You try to smuggle the Snickers at times like that, you know, and smile and go right ahead and re-steer your program around, get it back on track, and bring Judith right along in there with everybody else. Like I've said, look for ways to cut or lighten or change loads. And that takes, sometimes that takes a boldness and stepping out. There are some things that are helpful today. how many of you have ever had any experience with the old LSI reading program? You know, do any of you remember the reading machine? You know, here we go. And that thing never worked for me. I couldn't, nothing that moves, or my reading is so slow and stumbly. But anyway, I have found students that did help, especially if their reading was fairly good, but they needed to work on speeding it up. And they also needed to work on comprehension. Now, the comprehension is slow to build. It's really slow. So we have all of the old stories in all, the boxes of them, but we don't have the reading machine. I worked on those things till I could just about build one from scratch, blindfolded, and I got tired of it, and I don't even know what became of the thing. And they went out of market. But now that same program is, I think you can get that same program from the School of Tomorrow. Somebody help me out. Yeah, ACE. It's on computer, which is much better. Plug it in, does the same thing, increases, only it's a little more sophisticated now, and increases in increments. And so, just throwing that out there, I just found that I was just told that that's where you could get it. Some of us were talking about that old reading machine. Also working with, there's many helps out there as we address and we evaluate and analyze these things, like dyslexia. I'll quickly jump on that one for a couple minutes. The little girl that I was working with, she went to a doctor, and I told him to please especially focus on not just her eyesight, but some type of way of checking out actually what her brain's registering, what her eyes are seeing. Okay, the diagnosis was dyslexia. The wonder was a program, a computerized program, that is full of exercises instead of the old manual exercises. This thing is done on a computer. It uses the keyboard. It uses a screen, discernment of objects. It's training the brain to see what it's seeing. And the amazing thing about this is the doctor can check it from his office, her progress. It's an online program. And it could either, this couple does it at home. It could be done at school if you have a place that you're online or somewhere. That's something that I wasn't aware of until just lately. And there are others, I understand, that develop other areas other than just dyslexia problems that are also similar programs that are computerized programs that help take load off of the teacher. You know, if you've got a child here that needs this type of thing and you've cut a slot out of their work to do it, then how do you sit down and see to it happens? But if you've got a terminal over here that you can put them at and they can work, that's a blessing. That thing can be something that can help them go on. Okay, for a few minutes here, I'd like to touch. Well, before I do that, let's quickly look at something here. I've got this thing set up here. Okay, this is a very basic little drawing of the brain here. Looking at the system we're talking about here, and this behavior that we're talking about, reticular activating system in reticular formation. This reticular is this stem-looking thing here. Extends up into the brain. As you can see there, in that stem, there's 70% of the cells are in that area. Okay, we see this little thing here called the gatekeeper. Now, this is scientific discovery, you know, working with children and learning disabilities. That gatekeeper right there cannot do his job sometimes. Can you imagine the confusion we'd have in here if we had an usher back there that wasn't doing his job, and we were going to fill this room beyond capacity, but it happened all at one time? The process of getting through the door and getting into our seats and everything happening like it should. And that's what, you know, learning's all about. Well, if we can imagine all that happening, now let's turn it up. Have you ever fast-forwarded something? And let's see them coming through that door and coming in here and bumping in, you know, all right. Now you're getting a picture of what happens when the gatekeeper doesn't limit and help process the material that's coming into a child's mind or a person's mind. It allows so much to come in. That's the reason he's here, he's there, he's back here again. He's getting so much information that he actually, and it's going into the right place, but it can't be stored and handled properly. Until it's all said and done, a lot of it's just lost. Okay, see if you can relate to some of that. How many of those can you check? Most of them? Some of them? Probably depends on the student, doesn't it? I fit some of those and some of those I didn't. For some reason in my life, that last one there, often engages in physically dangerous activities without considering the possible consequences. You'll have to remember, I was raised in a secular world. My mom found me hanging off the back of the house one day. It was a two-story house by a rope, out of a window, and I was Batman. And I still remembered, she scared me worse than anything else. I had planned this thing for a while, and she comes down the hall and finds a window open with a rope going over the edge. The only problem is the rope was just tied to a nail drove in the wall. And she looks over the end of the windowsill and screams my name. I just about went ballistic. Okay. These are some things that teachers can do. Structuring our classroom time. Be positive. I've covered a lot of these. Be realistic. These charts, monitoring, these charts of monitoring things. You know, children like this often, that helps them. If they can see their progress or they can sense, this is me, I did this. Yesterday I did this. Now, tomorrow I want to try to do these other things. Help them set their goals. Your different learning centers have, I know you have many different applications here, probably varying from individualized classroom to modifications of all between. But we can mostly find some way to reach some of these. Test the child's knowledge. Begin a formal homework program. That's your relationship. You know, drawing mom and dad into this thing is so important. And then working closely with those parents. I hate to talk while you write, but we're running out of time here. Let's look at the home for just a couple minutes. I've talked about the mom and dad situation. And that's such an important part of help or hindrance. Sometimes I found students that struggled and mom and dad didn't really have their real interest in school like it should have been. They weren't a real school supporter. It was like, send Bobby through till he gets through, don't push him too hard, and get him out because I need him. I think a lot of us can relate to that. That attitude in itself is a big root in Bobby's complex system. How can I deal with that root? How can we work with that? It's a very slow process. I'm going to tell you that now. But it can be done. First of all, you're not going to tell them anything they don't already know. They really don't like to be told that you know things they don't. So, find equal ground to meet them on in talking about Bobby. Find things that you can express real appreciation for Bobby. Don't quickly get into Bobby's areas of struggle until we've opened this door of relationship. And then slowly start bringing them into it. And giving them a picture of the window that you're looking through into Bobby and his learning experience. But do it in a way that you're just wanting to share this with them. And ask for their help. Ask for their input. Don't just state these things and share them with them, but ask for their input. What we're getting at is we want them to feel needed, not just have a home experience with Bobby, but we want them to feel like they have a place in Bobby's school experience. And this is going to take a little bit of time. We're not going to erase their attitudes. We're going to amend them. And as we do that, pray. Pray for ways to do this and find opportunities after church, at other gatherings. Break away from the school setting. Mention Bobby and something Bobby did. Send something home. Give Bobby something that you are guaranteed he can succeed in and do well. And send it home for a signature or something. And let them see it. This is something so vital to a child. Because home and the attitudes at home can totally crush a child. When they bring school stuff home, if they hear, oh, that's okay.
For more free resources that support teaching and learning, visit the docforlearning.org.